So with Franklin Cook in room 207 still, and we're talking about how NYI began, and Franklin, back us up just a few paragraphs here. You said you saw the beginning pieces of how NYI's origin. Take it away.
Well, what I was suggesting is that in the early days, in the earlier days of denominational development, if I can put it that way, the youth organization, which was called NYPS, Nazarene Young People's Society, the preceding group from the NYI, was kind of a freewheeling, quasi-independent organization, self-defined, disconnected in some ways, which by its very nature was a leadership development organization. It was structured in such a way that a person received a lot of leadership training through the society.
So would that be the local church, the district?
The local church, exactly.
Okay.
And the role of the NYI, or of the NYPS councils, district council, general council, local church council, was very much perceived as a leadership development, almost like a minor league
farm team
kind of concept. Then at a particular point in time, somebody felt like it was necessary to find a more structured approach to youth ministry and to find a way to attach it in a more formalized way to the general denomination.
What years are we talking? When NYPS is kind of freewheeling to this point where it's becoming attached?
Without specifying a year, I'm thinking it was late 60s, early 70s.
Okay.
Paul Skiles had been Mr. NYPS for a long time, and he was approaching the age of 40. And the idea was that he was indispensable and we can't get along without Paul, so we have to find a way to accommodate the passage of time. And one way to do it was to make him a director under the general board and to create a sort of a bureaucracy to run all of the youth activity of the denomination under what was called at the time Department of Youth.
So is that just USA Canada, or is that globally?
No, global. This is before regions.
Okay.
There were no regions.
Pre-regions.
Pre-regions. This is prehistoric. So the philosophical debate at the time, which took place on trips that I was part of, and Paul was part of, and others were part of, I was just kind of listening into the conversation. But the philosophical debate was, if you move youth ministry or NYPS to a more formal institutional activity, will that kill the spirit, the spontaneous, independent, freewheeling leadership development spirit of NYPS, or not? And some people felt quite strongly that it would kill it, including in the local church, and some people felt very strongly that it would not. But whatever they felt, the decision was taken to move it in that direction. The evolution of the organization as an organization then has subsequently followed that original decision. I think somewhere in the 1990s, I don't know the year, they did a major renovation of the constitution of NYI, mm-hmm. changed the name, and the current structure of councils came out of that restructuring.
Okay.
That was led, I don't know if that was during Fred Fullerton's time. I just don't have those dates in my mind.
So when I had coffee with him yesterday, he was saying that he was in leadership over NYC 95
yeah.
through 99.
But he was the director
yeah.
of NYI.
Globally.
And I think he probably would have a better picture of all the sequencing of how that evolved. Because I think the desire to restructure and rewrite the Constitution came from the global side of things, including Deirdre Brower.
Okay.
And they felt like there had to be a way to accommodate the growth of the church globally outside of USA, Canada, in a meaningful way. And so they rewrote the Constitution, and I've read the Constitution. It's a very creative document. So the evolution is not a bad thing at all. It's just how it evolved. The question now that I just was posing earlier is, what is the role of NYI and the different people that are involved in NYI, and why is there this gap with young adults? Seems like it somehow should be covered with something,
right?
That would have, you know, meaning.
Sometimes when I have this conversation with people, the default is, well, they go to our Nazarene schools, but we know that that's not the majority going to our Nazarene schools, and we know that the percentages
right.
of Nazarenes on our Nazarene campuses.
Right.
Is less than what it used to be, and I'm a product of a Nazarene school. I love our Nazarene schools.
Well, I think there's another factor. I think the concept of what a local church is, it enters the picture here, because in the old days, I don't know where to put the line on old days, but in the old days, you had a lot of stuff going on in the local church that was structured, where people knew what they belonged to and what they were expected to attend. You had a Sunday night NYPS service. You don't have that anymore, right?
Some do. It's not a uniform thing. It's up to the local church.
You had a curriculum that was written in Kansas City.
And some use it, but some don't.
Right, but that's...
You got more options now than you did then.
In the old days, that's what you did.
Right. So everybody was on the same page with that.
The same is true with NMI. You had missionary societies who met and studied a curriculum that was set. That's it. So you had this structure within the local church where people like young adults could attach themselves and be involved. Again, a lot of it was leadership training. You take a 23-year-old and elect him president of the youth organization in a local church, whether he has any background or not, he's gonna learn. You know?
Yeah, that was me.
Make a lot of stupid mistakes in the meantime, but that's part of becoming a leader.
Failing forward.
And so when I say leadership training, I'm serious about it.
Yeah.
One of the major roles of YPS/NYI was leadership training for young adults.
Right.
For ministry. I don't know what functionally substitutes for that now.
Well, let's
except just kind of a group of hybrid organizations floating around. And if somebody has a great idea about, you know, doing care packets for this, or responding to an earthquake there, or a hurricane here.
Well, let me hijack this for my purposes, but your history. Take me back to the origin of youth and mission and how it began. You told me this story a number of times, but let's share it here.
In the early 1960s, when the second, some would call it the second American Revolution, began to brew, and there was discontent about anything institutional on the university and college campuses, and you had a growing war in Vietnam, the people were protesting, and the country was in ferment. Out of that environment came the idea from some of the university students, we need to get involved, we need to be involved in what's going on in the world. And as church members, we need to be involved in our church. It shouldn't be the exclusive domain of the professional missionary. So out of that idea came the notion of finding a way to involve university students in the mission of the church globally. And from that came the original idea of what was called Nazarene Evangelistic Ambassadors, which were two teams of 16 all men, no women, all men.
Why do you emphasize that?
I just, looking back, it's just so funny to think about that in context. It's just so unacceptable today.
Right, right.
But that was the mentality. And so three times, these two teams, different teams in different years, as I recall, 64, 66, and 69, went to different parts of the world, holding evangelistic campaigns and all that, with music and an evangelist and so on and so on.
Do you remember those locations?
Generally, yes, specifically.
What were some of them?
Caribbean area, Central America, then they expanded to South America. In 69, they expanded to Europe.
Which part?
Northern Europe, I think. Germany. Well, Italy was involved at that time. And you know, I think in 69 was the first involvement of a student from Europe on one of the teams.
So what's your role in all that?
My role at the time was initially kind of minimal. I just did a lot of the paperwork and the behind the scenes stuff. But in being part of the conversation, it became apparent to several of us that if this idea had any validity at all, that is, where non-professional youth would become part of the global mission, which had always been the domain of the professionally trained career missionary, then we ought to find a way to do more than just a 1 or 2 week in location activity with these kind of teams. So out of that grew the eye. At the same time, the program that was initiated under President Kennedy, John Kennedy, of Peace Corps, was receiving a lot of publicity. So I think the idea of a Peace Corps kind of thing motivated the key people to believe that we should experiment with the idea of sending groups of university students to places for the summer. And so that, in 1967, the first group was put together of 15 kids and sent to five different countries. I think it was five.
And was that called something different than the...
Yeah. In the first year, we came up with the absolutely abominable name of Youth Assistance Missionary Corps. It was one of the worst names ever given to any group ever.
Youth Assistant Missionary.
And we all laughed about it, and we thought, how can we be so dumb as to actually think that was going to work? And I think it was the very next year, 68, that we changed it to Student Mission Corps. And that's what it was from then until it became integrated under the Youth Department, now a Department of the General Board, because the Board of General Superintendents made a decision that all youth activity of the General Church should be administered by the Department of Youth.
So was that 1970?
Probably 78, 77, 78.
So Norm...
That's when Norm took it.
In
between me and
74, Norm becomes NYPS?
No. Oh, I don't...
And then in 77, it's renamed Youth and Mission.
No. When I left in 73, Rich Gammel...
Okay.
...became the director of Student Mission Corps. And I think it was about 3 or 4 years later that this decision was made from the boardroom on high. And it was all shuffled over to the youth department, and Norm was the guy running Lost and Found and different programs within the youth department at that time.
What year did you go to Tribeca?
73.
Now, haven't you told me a story about Norm flying down to Nashville and meeting with you?
Yeah, first Rich came down, and then a couple weeks later, Norm came down.
Because they switched Student Mission Corps from World Mission to NYPS.
The policy decision was all youth activities of the General Church involving youth,
which included young adults,
should be under the Department of Youth.
So what was the cap on that age that youth was defined as?
Well, I think everybody kind of thought it was 40.
Okay.
But in our case, that is in the case of the Department of World Mission, as it was called at the time, the major youth activity we had was Student Mission Corps. There was also things developing like work and witness programs and different things.
And what was your role in World Mission?
You name it.
Utility hitter?
Everything. I did everything. So that's kind of the sequence of how it began. And in our case, the only way I could sell Student Mission Corps in that first year or two was as a pilot program. They weren't ready to jump in and make it a big
commit long term.
Yeah, let's give it a try.
It's kind of where we're back at again today, Franklin.
Yeah. You know, I would always talk in terms of we're doing a pilot, we're going to try it, see if it works and what our problems are. And the first year we had those 15 kids, one of them flunked out. I mean, it was an unfortunate choice, but the others did real well.
Yep.
And then from there till probably 1967, so from probably 67 to probably 1970, I was fighting for survival every year. I mean, there was always people fussing about these college kids are messing us up. And,
on the mission field.
Yeah, they're bringing all these dumb ideas down, like, you know, they're infecting our young people, all this kind of stuff. So it took 3-4 years till the missionaries began to realize, hey, not only can this be, can we be agreeable to this in our strategy, but it actually could help us. And honestly, I give a lot of credit to Louis and Ellen Bussell. I don't know if you know Louis and Ellen.
Well, I met Louis at General Assembly this last summer.
They went out as a, I asked them to go. I'd known Ellen before I knew Louis, but I knew both of them. And I knew they felt like they were called to be missionaries. And I asked them to go with Student Mission Corps, which they did. And then they were appointed to go to Virgin Islands as missionaries. And I asked them their very first or second year in the Virgin Islands, hey, would you guys take a group of students? Oh, sure, we'll do that. And man, they took a big group. And Ellen is an organizer. So she put that whole thing together. And I give them a lot of credit for finding the way to effectively use, creatively use college age kids in promoting the ministry of the church.
So is this in the 70s?
Yeah, 70, 71, somewhere in there. Okay, I don't know how long you've got, but if we're going to do Albania, we better.
Let's do Albania.
Let me pause this here. Thanks, Franklin.
Because it's 11, I can't stay forever.